All right. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Angie Atkinson, and I'm here with the lovely and talented Lise Colucci. Lise, welcome back.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello, hello. We are here today to talk about toxic relationships and how a lot of times when a lot of times when we're dealing with a toxic relationship and we come out of it, we look back and realize that everything we thought was true wasn't, or maybe some of it wasn't. So Lise had some questions. Now, before we jump into all of that, let me just say this. Hello, everybody. Let me just say, if you have not been here before, if this is your first time, we do this stream every Tuesday, right around this time. We have an awesome mod squad. Hello, thank you for being here, Jack, and I assume Huffle Mom's on our way in, and they will be filling you in on how to connect with us outside of this stream and how to make sure you don't miss it next time. If you have any other questions, I will put all the links and everything below in the chat and links to my channel and Lisa's channel on the back end of the video when this is all posted. All right, Lise, you have something for us. Somebody sent you. Go ahead.
Oh, let me read it. Let me see. Well, somebody sent a question over to my channel. So we're bringing it here. it was, they were trying to find help on reconciling that the relationship, that everything they experienced in the relationship wasn't real, meaning it wasn't real to the toxic person, I'm assuming here. They said that they are having trouble accepting, processing, and grieving that the entire relationship wasn't real. And then they had a bunch of questions at the end. They said most of the time they don't think of it, but it's always there. How was it not real? I loved it and I felt it. It was, and there was so much of it. Yeah. So sounds like trying to understand the difference between how you feel and felt in a relationship and how it was real to you, and the delusional relationship that the narcissist experiences.
Yeah.
And reconciling the two things.
Yeah. And then on that same note, I just want to throw this in because it's another thing that people also deal with, is I think, which is on the same lines, but if you grew up with a toxic parent, a lot of times you look back and think, right, the same, like, what is real? What do I believe? That happened to me.
It happens a lot. And then people think, am I real? Am I who I am and how I experience myself? Is that even real? Who would I have been if I hadn't had that?
I went through periodically.
Oh, yeah.
It's existential crisis, but yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So that stuff too. Okay, so let's start off. So Lise, when you finished up with, when your toxic relationship ended, your relationship with a narcissist, you were married to him, right?
No.
No, okay.
Well, no, yeah, not married.
Okay. No matter, we don't need to get into specifics.
Yeah.
But it was a long-term
relationship. Long-term, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so when you finished the relationship, how did you go through this? Did you find yourself shocked?
I think I went through it while in it, and because it took me a long time to leave, and I did what I advise people never to do, which is stay and study them.
I
had a friend that finally said, "Why are you being a lab rat? When you're done being a lab rat in your own life, let me know." And I said, okay, but they were right. And
everybody needs a friend like that.
Everyone, but at the same time, I learned a lot, and here I am to help you with all the information that I learned. So
that's right.
So yes, I went through it, but it was during it, and I do hear it a lot from people about you know how it's a kind of cognitive dissonance, and it's a kind of a lack of acceptance of the difference between somebody with empathy and someone without.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think with narcissists, a lot of times what we see is that they sort of bake their reality or your reality with them around whatever's convenient for them in the moment. So like when you first meet them, they might have all the same interests as you, or they might have at least one common interest or whatever. And then by the end of the relationship, you're out in left field somewhere and spinning as they're moving on to whatever else they're actually into, or they're not into anything except for whatever their current supply is into.
Exactly.
So you find a lot of times that, you know, did they really love me? Did they really care about me? Was this just, you know, and it's especially difficult, I think, when we're talking about really long-term relationships, like 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you know, I've had clients who were married for as long as 45 years, you know, and then you go, my whole life is a lie, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's difficult.
It's the thing is, it isn't a lie to you.
Right.
Your reality is your reality. And you've been gaslit for so long that you can't even learn how to trust. You have to learn how to trust that again.
Right.
But what was real to them is not the same version as what was real to you.
Right.
So and you think you're building this, but really you're building two separate things.
Right. And I think their version of reality is so much less. That's the word I'm looking for here. it's conditional, mm-hmm. and it's also, I just looked down at the screen and I saw you doing this and I realized it was, never mind. We're behind.
There's a delay.
Woo, okay. Yeah. Sorry. I got distracted. anyway. Yeah. So I think what it comes down to for narcissists is that they might have said to you, and they might, I don't think they're capable of loving in the same way that a normal human is, right? So I've talked about the cell phone example a lot.
Yes.
Right, where, so sometimes everybody keeps using the word relationship and YouTube keeps hitting it, keeps hiding their stuff. it's a legit word though, relationship. Anyway, where was I? Okay, so I think what it comes down to is, like the cell phone example where, you know, when you get a new cell phone, look, have you seen my new cell phone? It's really, really cute. Look.
I've heard of those. Very cute. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So when you get a new cell phone though, you're like, wow, this one's so much faster than my old one, or it's so much better, or whatever it happens to be. And so then even though you did love your old cell phone, you probably don't love it anymore. You probably don't even care that your son's using it now or whatever. Whereas with a person, you know, it's a whole different thing. But with a narcissist, they see you as an object. And so therefore, while you're in their hands being properly, you know, a good source of supply, so to speak, working functionally as they want you to, you know, you're golden. But then the moment that a newer, different model comes out, one that folds or one that has a different feature or whatever, then they're like, oh, you're old news. And now this other thing is, you know, so this is kind of how the narcissists love in general, right? Like they would love an object or like a little kid with a toy. So little kid has a doll, they love the doll or a truck or whatever. It's their favorite thing in the whole wide world. Then they get a new one. And then that old one is boring. And so then they leave the old one aside until the other kid wants to come play with it.
Exactly. Then that's mine. Don't touch
my
it.
My toy.
Yeah. My toy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm just going to throw it away as soon as you walk away, but it's my toy now.
Right. And you cannot have it and enjoy it. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The person, yes. They said something in this that I didn't read, but I'm going to because it's.
Yeah, please point, do.
Okay. So understanding what you're saying, that they love differently. Mm-hmm. They do love. They just love differently.
Yeah.
Not the love that we need that's deep and connected and they aren't soul anything,
okay? Yeah.
Except stealing.
Soul crushers, maybe.
They're soul crushers, right? But there's no deep depth. It can feel like there is because some of them have the words, some of them are spiritual.
They become infatuated,
so they have the right words, but it isn't reciprocal in the same way as it needs to be for a person who is trying to have a meaningful relationship. So that's where we're coming from and that's where they're coming from. And then, so what this person said was, they're okay with it right now overall, but it always comes back to this point for them, which it made it easier. I think they mean during the relationship to deny the reality.
Yep.
It was too mind bending and painful. So I'd believe in the hope and the illusions, even though I knew all of this inside.
Yeah.
And I think that's the acceptance that what is, you cannot swim with a shark and pretend it's a goldfish.
Right.
It won't change into a goldfish. It will always be a shark.
Right.
And yeah. So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that the other side of this point, I agree with you. You have to accept the reality of what was for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's difficult, especially when you told yourself a good story the whole time.
Yep.
Which we all do in order to, you know, to make it feel okay.
Right.
But something that I think is a, maybe even a silver lining to all of this is that no matter how old you are, at the moment that you exit that relationship, maybe even before, maybe even the moment you start to realize what you're dealing with, you have choices and you can choose to stay stuck in that negative loop of oh my God, it wasn't real. Oh my God, it was, oh, it's so bad, you know. Or you can go through that part and accept it. And then you can choose to reinvent yourself into whatever the heck you want.
Exactly.
You know, and that part, I think, is the silver lining. It sounds silly to say that, but there aren't that many people. If you think about it in the grand scheme of things, most people just believe things happen to them.
Yeah.
They just believe that they can just, you know, this is life and this is what I am and I have no choice and I can't change. But the truth is, when you are in a relationship with a toxic person and you come out to the other side and you find out, you know, crap, everything I thought was true isn't true, or at least 50% of it, right?
Right.
Then you get to decide who you are if you want to.
Right. And a lot of times those truths that we're hearing are pieces of a truth. In other words, if they say you're too sensitive, so you spend your life thinking I'm too sensitive, that's why people can't get along with me because I overreact. Okay, maybe you do a little bit because you're believing that you are that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe if you believe you're too sensitive, then you overreact because in your head you're thinking, oh, something's wrong with me, and then you're freaking right. out. If you just, and relaxing all of that takes it away or diminishes it.
Yeah.
Or maybe the truth is anyone with empathy and caring and kindness would be that sensitive.
That's right. Yeah. And
so you're not doing anything unusual. You're just being a normal, sensitive person as you are built right. and meant to be. It's not a bad thing.
Right. And you can't, like, the narcissist will expect you to become like them, mm-hmm. which they actually don't want, ironically enough.
No.
No. But right. I mean,
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is that as we try to accept what they are, what we're really doing, and what's more important is accepting who we are.
Ding, ding.
Yay.
Ding, ding. That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the thing is accepting who you are. It's, you know, look, none of us are perfect. No. That's right.
Thank goodness. We'd be so boring.
Right. And what's perfect anyway?
Nothing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
What is perfect? But everybody, you know, so everybody has flaws, everybody has faults. And so a lot of people are like, well, you know, I stayed in that relationship, so it's really my fault. Or I should have known better. I'm mm-hmm. smart. That was my biggest thing. I should have known better because mm-hmm. I'm smart enough to know better. But you know what? They're really good at fooling you. And life happens and things happen. And you can't beat yourself up about things that you can't control. So,
right. And it's a lot easier to stay in what you're already in and invested time in than it is to mm-hmm. step out of it. Not even easier. It is natural.
Right. It feels easier in the moment. It
feels natural that you would, mm-hmm. I've invested 10 years into this. Why would I walk away?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, and you know, you can choose to do that and then you can choose to deal with that. But I think what it comes down to is finding peace in yourself and choosing to, number one, like we said, admit what really happened, admit mm-hmm. the truth to yourself. Mm-hmm. And then releasing the need to hold the narcissist accountable for their behavior.
Yep. Yep.
Which is very difficult.
They'll never, ever right. hold that for you right. and accept it. So you can put the blame, so to speak, onto them in your mm-hmm. own mind.
Sure.
Why not? That's it, because actually it's where it belongs.
Right.
But don't expect them to be accountable.
You can't. You
can't.
And that's right. I mean, you can try.
For a long time, over and over.
Yeah. It'll just drive you crazy. I've had clients who would not, they really struggled to walk away simply because they wanted their person to just admit what they did.
Yep.
And, or they struggled to heal for the same reason. And the thing is, they can't because they don't acknowledge it.
No, it's like the number two trait of, in my opinion, of narcissism is the lack of accountability.
That's right. Yeah, they can't. And so when they do say anything, you know, that they're always going to somehow, well, maybe I did this, but that's because you did that at the very best. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they're always going to blame. So if you want to talk to a brick wall for 20 more years, you know, that's cool. You should, but.
A lot of people also in the same category or the mm-hmm. same, it's the same thing with a different method is right. they will go back to a Hoover or with a Hoover, or they will stay after the devaluing when it's almost a discard and they'll work their way back into the narcissist's favor in order to watch the bad thing play out again.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know what I mean? Like waiting for them to cheat again, waiting for them, whatever it is. And they're just like, I'm just waiting to see what will happen. I'm just waiting to see. And you know what's going to happen. So it's almost like needing punishing that shock value, but the shock value isn't going to work because then you're going to go back into the same loop again.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's the whole process.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So let's jump into the chat. Unless you have anything else you want to add before we do that.
No, I just, just acceptance on both parts, like accepting, yeah. I think the most, a lot of people also, so another thing is they don't, what do they say? It's like they feel guilty for blaming or guilty for saying, you know, not taking accountability for their part or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about a lack of acceptance there too. If you can accept that a person just legitimately doesn't have empathy and won't take accountability, those two things, if you can accept that, why would you continue having a conversation?
Right.
There's no point.
Right. Agreed.
You know? Yep. So yeah. Anyway,
yep.
To the chat.
To say the, that again. I missed
it. To the chat. I'm
to the chat. Okay. All right. Let's see. Here's one from Richard. He says, I know rationally that the relationship was, like when they say that, the relationship wasn't true, but 2 years along, even last night, I dreamed otherwise. When does this end? This is so hard. Okay. So it's really difficult when it's like all up in your subconscious, right? Mm-hmm. Which it almost always will be on some level. He says, I was invested on my end, but of course she wasn't on her end.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very difficult, right? Because I don't actually know if Richard was with a she or not. I didn't see that, so I shouldn't assume anything. But anywho, my point is, Richard's partner was a narcissist, according to what I'm seeing here. And I think I remember Richard from previous streams. And now Richard had a dream about this person and dreamt it was real. This is more common than you probably think. Sometimes there are dreams, sometimes there are fantasies, but in any case, when does it stop? I mean, there's no sure way. One thing that I find to be really helpful is to do some sort of like bedtime routine. Mine's really lame and boring. Like I just do all the things with my hair and put my hair up and do the face and the teeth and all that. But then I always watch like a sitcom or something silly. And sometimes I'll do some other meditation or whatever, but I'll sit and, you know what I mean? I do something to just take my mind off of what I'm like my real life, mm-hmm. just to slow me down a little bit. That helps. Some people like music. What do you do for it, Lise? What do you think about it?
Well, first I want to say that you're dreaming. How long did they say? What was it?
That's been 2 years.
It's been 2 years in there. Okay. Sometimes mm-hmm. we're dreaming. We're finally ready to process something.
There you go.
In that part. And so what you're dreaming isn't, okay. Dreams are not reflections of reality. They're the subconscious taking fragments of what it experienced, mm-hmm. storing it, and then spitting it back out in the form of images and archetypes, and it's imagery and sensation. It's not literal. Okay. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. well, at least that's my understanding. And so sometimes journaling those dreams, looking up the symbols, like journal everything. Where were you? What were you doing? What colors did you see? It's the little things and the symbol and the symbolism.
That's valid.
Yeah, it can totally change the way you see that dream.
Yeah, and your partner in the dream could even represent something else.
It could represent a part of you.
Yes.
Where you're stuck, mm-hmm. where you're stuck letting go of a piece of what happened or a piece of yourself that has a belief about what happened. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Good stuff. And so obviously, I think that's smart. But I also think it's smart, like I said, you have to think about what you were eating mm-hmm. that night, drinking that night, mm-hmm. doing before you went to sleep. Were you thinking about this person? You know,
right.
what I mean?
If you're the one. Yeah. I think for that, I suggest doing the gratitude journal before bed.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. and even if the only thing you can do is three things you're grateful for, you don't have to do 10, even if it's just a few, because then when you wake up, say you had a bad dream,
mm-hmm.
and keep it right by your bed, you wake up and you're like all freaked out from the dream in a, mm-hmm. in a cold sweat, you read that gratitude journal and it brings you back to your reality that you chose instead of the one that's spinning up here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's really good. And I like the dream journal idea as well, because there are so it actually, it's kind of fun doing the dream really journal fun. Thing and then searching.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I think that's a good idea too. All right. Let's see what else we've got here. Let's see. Angie Miller says, I feel like I've lost myself and I can't get back to me. And I think that is a very, like as Jack noted right below that, it's a very common sentiment among survivors, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, if I'm being honest, I think we all kind of, I kind of go through it periodically. You know what
it's
I mean?
Normal. Like, yeah. It's normal, but it's exaggerated when you've been with someone.
Yes. Like, yeah. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I like to call these existential crises. Mm-hmm. And here's how I like to look at it, Angie. I like to look at it as something's coming, some big change is coming. I can feel it. It's on the tip of my soul as though my soul were my tongue. and I just have to be patient and be calm with myself and compassionate and be open to whatever comes next. Now that sounds silly. That's for a general existential crisis. In this case, you know, I want you to remember that, and then I'm going to have Lise talk to you because she has also good ideas. But I want you to remember that going through this time in your life, it does have that potential that you can choose it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so sometimes just trying out different things can help. Like if when you were a kid, you rode horses, like go ride a horse for a minute, you know, go out to one of those horse farms and rent a horse or whatever. Or if you like to sing, go to karaoke night with a friend. Or if you like to paint, go to one of those, you know, paint and sip things. Like start to find things that you used to like and try them again. Mm-hmm. And then maybe try new things and just start to, you know, decide who you want to be. Mm-hmm. That's the beginning. Mm-hmm. Because really, ultimately, if you really think about it, we all decide on some level. Just a lot of us let other people define us growing up because we didn't know we had the right to decide, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts, Lise?
Yeah, that's all what I would suggest too. And more, even more, try things you've never tried.
Yes.
Because the things you used to do, you may not be ready to feel the joy you used to feel yet.
Sure.
And be okay that if you used to love riding horses and you ride a horse and you're like, that was dumb. That's normal too. Totally normal. Doesn't mean you don't love riding horses. It means your emotions aren't kicked in yet.
Yeah. On the horse topic, can I just pop in really quick with an unrelated thing? I used to ride horses when I was a kid. And so like about 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years ago, I don't know. Sometime in the last decade, I went horseback riding again. It was so bad in the train, road trails and stuff, mountain trails. Oh my God, it was the worst thing ever. My body was not used to it. My body was like,
no.
Like within minutes of getting on the horse, it was like a 3-hour ride. It was awful.
Right.
I was so sore for like 3 weeks. Okay, moving on.
The other thing is sometimes finding yourself isn't in the doing, it's in the experiencing of the world. So
yes.
Pay attention to things that make you feel joy. Like I always say the puffy clouds, you know, the puffy cloud days are my happy days because I could be in the worst mood and I can feel myself when I see those clouds.
Yeah.
And it doesn't,
that's pretty cool.
You know what I mean? And it doesn't mean, it doesn't, there's no one would get it. It's just me. It's in my experience of myself.
Right.
Period. Right. There's nothing else. Like seeing a flower, seeing a tree, seeing, it's usually related to nature for me, but it could be looking at cars. Usually through your senses.
Yeah.
So pay attention to your senses and just get into like, oh, that actually, and pay attention. Oh my gosh, that felt great. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And then move on, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And two things, I want to add two things to that. Number one, I found journaling to be incredibly, incredibly powerful in my own healing.
Mm-hmm.
And also in discovering who I am and who I want to be and all that stuff. Number two, you were talking about that. Wait a minute. Darn it. Okay. What were you saying right before that? Because I lost.
I said experiencing yourself in the world versus what you're doing.
Yes.
Versus trying to get the world to give to you.
Yes.
Experience
okay.
what it feels like to be you in the world.
Okay. I got it. So a lot of times when we are in relationships with toxic narcissists, we are actively, I was actively shutting myself down.
Oh, heck yeah. All the time.
24/7, right? Mm-hmm. Because emotions were a problem for the narcissist and therefore a problem for me, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I did my very best to feel very little.
Yep.
And the problem with that, of course, is that it's difficult to get it back when you're used to living that way for a long time.
Yes.
So Angie Miller might be struggling in that same way where she is. And, you know, let us know, Angie. So weird to say your own name. Anyway. Okay, moving on. Where she is in this position where she can continually stay in, I'm guessing she's dissociating and staying cloudy, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So losing yourself, not being able to get back to you. Okay, one more thing I want to say about that really quick. When you lose yourself, you might be like, I want to be who I was. I want to get back to the person I was. But the fact is, you can't unless that was yesterday. Okay.
Yeah. That's not going to happen. Yeah.
Right. You are who you are. And there's just,
you just take the wisdom that you learned from all of this and it becomes mixed with, there is a great story. I have got to find this story because there is a great story about it. And it's Clarissa Pinkola Estes, who I adore. And she tells this story about blending the maiden mother crone. So blending the innocence of the innocence of who you were before you met the narcissist, the pain and the suffering of what you experienced, and then the scarred but strong survivor that is now thriving, and blending all three of those is who you become. And it's a beautiful person, you know.
And that's kind of what I was going to say, but I was going to say it much less eloquently than that. I was just going to say who you were, you can take parts of that and become a different version of a better, I like to say a better version maybe, because you can sort of, like you said, blend it all. I like the way you said it much better.
Well, it's not me. It's how she said it that is my coming
through. She said it better.
She says it great. I got to find the story.
Yeah, it's really great. Yeah. Okay. She says, do you feel like, wait a minute. She said, do you feel like you can't do anything, like you're stuck? You can't even clean the house. Little things overwhelm you. You feel like you're losing it. Yes, girl. That's exactly how you feel. We all have felt, I feel that way still sometimes.
I do too. When over, that's PTSD brain. When overwhelm hits, you're already here. So you got that much room, and that's like eating and like breathing. Yes. All that's left.
It's very hard.
Yeah. Yes. Meditation, relaxation, calming, yoga, Pilates, whatever, swimming.
Baby steps.
I mean, not a whole workout. I'm talking one pose.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about with the clutter and stuff and the house and stuff.
Oh yeah. Get it.
You know, if you can afford to pay somebody to come over and help you out one time, do that. It helps a lot. I do it anytime I can.
Get a friend to help. If you can get a friend to help and share.
Right. A sister, whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And anybody, and then, but even then, if you can't do that, just do one surface to start. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm looking over here at my buffet table, I could probably keep the top of it off. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like whatever it is, you know, sometimes you just take one, give yourself, okay, I only have to do this one thing that I can stop if I want. And then you can. But that's another day. We'll talk about that later.
Well, anyway. One thing I understand about this that I've been told is that part of what happens when we are overwhelmed is that our dopamine gets low.
Yes.
And you cannot increase dopamine without, well, you can, but it's very difficult to increase dopamine without activity. And so if you do the baby steps, it can help you build toward a bigger step and then a bigger step because you're increasing your own, you're helping your brain chemistry.
Yes.
But if you overwhelm yourself, then you just bury yourself under.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And to Angie, I would say one more thing. I would say, don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help, whether you get a coach, a therapist, a friend, somebody that you trust that you can talk to about this, and even somebody that can come in and help you in your home if necessary. I mean, maybe if you can't afford it, you can like trade services with a friend. Like if you're really good at building web pages or whatever, or if you're really good at something that person could use that you don't mind doing, babysitting, maybe whatever. And then they can maybe come over and help you organize if you can't, you know, afford to have, anyway, just a thought or whatever your main issue is. But I do agree with Lisa. I think it's important to move a little more than, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought in the comments. But yeah. Okay. Did you have another?
No, good.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Trying to see if I can, I lost, you know what happened, right?
I do. Yeah. It's hard to scroll. Yeah. For everyone who doesn't know, it is very difficult to scroll and talk, and we have no scripts. So we're like shooting from the hip here, reading stuff. It's a little, it does stuff to your head up here. And I get to sit here calm because this time I don't have to read that chat.
See, she's over there. It's fine.
I'm filling in while you read here, Angie.
I appreciate you. Okay. I'm over here. Boo-boo. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. Okay. So, Huffle Mom's doing her. Thank you, Huffle Mom. Okay. Kitten has thoughts. Great name. Says, what helps me is becoming part of the cause and knowing that I'm contributing to others getting out of this horrific experience as well. That's literally amazing. Love it. Hello, Shastina. Welcome back. Misty.
That's actually an important point. Having a purpose. it doesn't have to be to this cause. It doesn't have to be to a cause that actually, that helps people even. We don't have to have these grand causes. It can be tiny, tiny things that gives you purpose.
Yeah.
In your life, teeny tiny, because some people, that's too overwhelming to, if you stay immersed in this, it's very difficult. I mean, Angie and I have to do our own self-care in a big way in order to help people all day long, right?
Truly.
Yeah, it's a lot, you know. So for some people, that's not possible. So it doesn't even matter, like, if what you're doing that makes you feel important or makes you feel a sense of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It can be the tiniest thing or the biggest thing, and having that. So sometimes seeking that versus seeking what you like, or in combo, you know.
Right, in combination. Yeah, I always want you to feel joy.
And of course. Yeah.
But it definitely, I mean, certainly it helps to help people in any way that you're capable.
Feeling purpose. It could be could be reminding your friend to get an oil change. It doesn't matter what it is, you know, it's just, yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Okay, let me see here. All right, so Darlene says, I was told by many people that I'm too sensitive because I cry easily, but I consider it a compliment because this is part of my compassion and empathy. Yes, Darlene, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I will say this. I don't cry as easily as I used to cry. But I used to be a teenager, so.
Lucky you, man.
Yeah, I still cry, but it's a lot, yeah. And sometimes I can hide it pretty well, so that helps too.
I didn't cry a lot until I hit 48.
Sure. That's coming. That's coming. So you know, but I'm not,
oh my goodness. All the tears you never cried.
Yeah, I only about 3 days a month right now where I'm crying a little bit, but it's mostly okay.
Yeah,
mostly okay. But no, it's a thing. It is, and you're right. It is something to be. That cat is messing with my camera again. It is something to be. He's such a bunghole. Okay. Sorry. Anyway, as we were saying, it is something to be. You know.
Yeah, your sensitivity is your strength. It's a huge strength in life.
Yeah.
And it's who you
not
are.
Everybody can handle.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, I think that's what it comes down to is a lot of times people who are emotionally abused or otherwise abused in life, I did it for a long time. They just shut it all off. I didn't want to feel my emotions. They hurt and sucked and I didn't like that. So I just wanted to feel nothing. And for a while I kind of did just feel nothing, but in the long run that doesn't, okay. Yeah. In the long run, that doesn't really benefit anybody. So I just had a pop-up come up for your next appointment, which is in a few minutes, Lise. So what do you say?
I don't have a next appointment.
Are you sure? I just saw one for Brenda.
Oh, you're right. It's that what time it is. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm like, what? I don't have, it's that time already. No, it's 15 minutes. I'm good.
We get so excited. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's see here. So Angie says, why is that so hard to do? My awesome son is a narcissist. I think she means is a narcissist. And he told me, I have so many months to mourn a death. Can you believe? Okay. You can mourn a death as long as you, as Rory Wright says here, grieving time is personal. There's nobody that can tell you how long you can grieve or how short you must grieve. Your son needs to be told to mind his own damn business in that case. Mm-hmm. Pardon my language. However, with that being said, if he is a narcissist, he will certainly not allow you to.
He doesn't want to deal with your emotions.
Right. So
they're not directed at him.
Right. I'm assuming he might be an adult since you're saying he is a narcissist.
Yeah. That's
in which case, I mean, if he's not living in your house or paying your bills, then even if he is paying your bills, he still doesn't have the right to treat you like crap. I don't know your story, so I would need to know more information to give you a better answer. But I feel like what I'm hearing is that your son is harassing you about mourning the death of someone that you cared about, and I don't like that. That's not okay. I agree with. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Whoa. All right. Let's see. Shastina says, "Wait, I want to say something really quickly just about the moderation stuff, guys, that I'm seeing in the chat here. We don't choose which messages go into moderation; they just are done by YouTube, and we have to then release them to be shown. So nobody's singling anyone out, I don't think. Just want to throw that out there. Okay.
Yeah, it just bounces it in.
It's not really, it's YouTube that does it. We don't do it. And so it's not something that, yeah. Okay. I've seen several go through the chat today that were held for silly reasons, like relationship, which I think is hilarious. Okay. But anyway, moving on. Chasina says, they will never accept 100% accountability. 100% true. That's right. That's right. And you're welcome, Angie. Michelle says, the more you try to get them to accept responsibility, the more they turn it on. Yeah, but this is from we were talking. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. They do. They turn it right around on you, don't they?
Oh, heck yeah. Or peripheral things that. Or they play victim and you end up consoling them for something they did to you.
or begging them to forgive you for something they did to you because of your reaction to
it. Exactly. Because you overreacted and you hurt them.
How dare you? How dare you? How dare you? There's like the spaghetti sauce thing. Yeah. Heard that one, right? Mm-hmm. I had a narcissist once drop a spaghetti sauce jar on my foot, my toe. I screamed and acted crazy because it hurt like hell, like really bad. It was a full spaghetti sauce jar. Okay. Glass jar full of spaghetti. It was 28 ounces. Okay. That's more than a pound, but falling on your toe, naked toe.
Oh yeah.
Well, you're gonna get demonetized for saying naked. Anyway, it was really bad. It hurt really bad. And this person was so upset by my yelling that I had to apologize for hurting that person's ears. Moving on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had the same thing where he pushed past my dog on the stairs and I was below the dog. He literally pushed the dog out of the way. The dog fell, hit my leg. I fell down the stairs. Mm. So I'm laying at the bottom of the stairs screaming and yelling about my ankle. Mm. And instead of saying, can I get you an ice pack or can I help you upstairs? It was, see what happens when you let the dogs run on the stairs.
Are you effing kidding me?
And then the dog was in trouble and stuck in the crate. And I'm like, no, my dog's fine. I need to bring my dog here. You get out, you know, like that is, yeah.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really They're bad. Just done. No accountability. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Darlene says to Angie Miller, I get that. Narcissists don't experience emotions like normal people. So they don't understand like those of us who do. Grieve as long as you need. 100% with you. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Darlene. Jack says, I think we are sometimes hindered by our empathic natures. We have trouble seeing how narcissists can be so emotionally cold because we just aren't.
Really good point. I'm sorry, I totally interrupted. It just, it's a topic I don't know how to quite say. We have to use our empathy to see a narcissist. What that means is accepting them for who they are. Try to experience the world without the empathy. That's true empathizing with a narcissist.
That's right. And
does that make sense? It's sticky. It feels so bad. You're going to pull out from it and be like,
bad.
What it's like. And yeah. And what we're doing is we're empathizing with the gaslighting. We're empathizing with the lies they're telling.
Right. And don't misunderstand this. People think narcissists don't have emotions. Yes, they do.
Yes, they do.
Only care about theirs.
Exactly. They have emotions. Yeah. They don't have the ability to care about your emotions or your, your anything.
Right. And the worst part is they can recognize your emotions.
Oh, heck yeah.
So cognitively they know, okay, that's a sad face. Mm-hmm. Those tears probably mean that person's upset about this, that, or the other. They can recognize that stuff, but they can't care.
They don't care as long as unless it hurts them.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And then they'll just make you apologize for your feelings.
That sad face you're making is making me feel something and I don't like it. So
yes,
not making that, stop it. Yeah.
Make me feel better, please, or I'm going to be angry and mean and hateful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, please. By the way, that was just me being a nice person. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's see here. Connor says, they know inside though, they won't admit, but they know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They know, but they don't. I don't know if they always know that they're a narcissist.
They know that there's something. I've seen them shove it behind you can see it. It's like this recognition and then stone cold.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of them, you know, depending on the type of narcissist they are, a lot of them have this ability to really believe that whatever they say, think, or feel is correct. And they will
delusional,
they will lie to themselves and believe it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't tell you how many times a certain person in my life lied to everyone she knew and believed it, lied so often and so much that she literally believed the lies to the point that she would
absolutely
pass a lie detector test. Probably.
I had a therapist I asked about that very mm-hmm. thing, and she's really good at understanding diagnoses. And she said, she said the majority of the narcissists she has seen, known in her life and whatever, seem to also have some form of schizoaffective, or like their delusional state is so far mm-hmm. that it is that they legitimately can convince themselves of the lies in a split second. It's a split second delusional based.
Right. And then most of them are, a large percentage of them are pathological liars, and those who aren't mm-hmm. will twist the truth and use little loopholes to kind of lie indirectly.
And I think some of them love it. I think some of them get off on the lying and they want to get caught.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh. I've heard a narcissist talk about what a great liar they are.
Oh yeah.
How everybody always, I just think it's crazy, but
everyone believes me.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's the whole thing. Yeah.
It's like the Eddie Haskell. Syndrome.
Exactly. We have a super chat from Huffle Mom. Thank you. She says, what is a good way to handle cross triggering in a relationship? And Jack Lumen and I and others have serious problems with it. Okay. So you have two survivors in a relationship. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the best way to I know we tried safe words at one point. What is the best way to handle it when one triggers the other? What are your thoughts?
Recognize it. And it may be that one of you is stronger at recognizing than the other. And so you have to be the one to catch it. Mm-hmm. have like a safe word around it. We're triggered. Mm-hmm. Our traumas are arguing, not us. That's what I say. Our traumas are arguing, not us. And step away, be okay with the silence for a little bit. Give it like literally have a rule where you step away for 10 minutes, mm-hmm. 15 minutes. And while you're stepping away, take some breaths, take a walk, detach from the argument. Mm-hmm. It's handling. You got to learn to handle the triggers. Because what happens in a relationship with anyone who's had trauma is you get triggered. You start responding as if that person meant the trigger, and then they're triggered because you're kind of treating them like their toxic person treated them. And then it just escalates into, you're not even fighting. You're just, you're in reaction. Like ping pong. Yeah.
Right. I do think it's a really good idea to take space. I love the safe word idea. I know it can help if you also implement other things with it. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important. This is really hard when you're in that mode, in that triggered mode. Right. But when you are in that mode and you do step away for a little while and start to clear your head, first give yourself a little bit of time to be angry. It's okay to be angry. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Let it go. And then if you need to like scream and yell and throw things and break them, do it in a separate room. and then when you're done with that part, then take a few minutes and think about, well, how would I feel if that person, you know, in this case, if Jack were to talk to me that way, or if Hopeful Mom, if I'm not going to say your real name, if she were to talk to me that way, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. and really imagine how that take a moment to be extra empathetic in that moment.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And being empaths and being people who have been, not that everybody who's a survivor is an empath, but for those who are, and even for those who aren't, you can absolutely learn to just give your partner some empathy, because if you guys have been through the same thing mm-hmm. and if you're both working on healing, you know, you can do it.
I find it takes about a day to process after mm-hmm. a big one. And usually what I do is I write down the actual thing I was, because there's usually something real in there that you're upset mm-hmm. about. So I write down the actual thing I was upset about mm-hmm. without justifying myself or accusing him mm-hmm. and then just write it out so that I know, so I'm clear and I'm not lost in the trigger. And then I take that as a talking point later and I say, mm-hmm. okay, are you ready to talk about, here's what I was at here. And I like literally slide it across the table. This is what I was actually upset. That's what you were upset about. Oh my gosh. I heard blah, 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 blah. Okay. And then usually we talk about what the triggers were, like, oh, you shut down. You shut down because you're used to getting screamed at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. you know, get it. And then, or I did this or whatever. And then we talk about how to better approach. And it actually works. We're now not doing that so much, but.
Right. That's amazing. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to Health is Beauty to this family friend. Thank you. We're happy to have you, a new member. Health is Beauty. Okay. We are just a couple minutes from wrapping up. So Lise, do you want to, I know we've got so many great comments here. Do you want to give them a final, I'm legally binding cult? Wait a minute. Hold on. Amanda says, I'm in a legally binding cult in a sense with this family who have the most control and shake me down like for fun. I don't get to see my 6-year-old because of this. Oh my God.
No.
Amanda, I want to know so many more things about that. I wish that we had more time. Please come back and talk with us next week because I need to know more about your situation and I'd like to try to offer some sort of help.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we ready to wrap up? Do you have any final words?
No, I've got to go in a second. So yeah.
All right, everybody. We will see you next week on Tuesday. There will be also videos being uploaded on this channel and over on Lisa's channel, which is Lisa Colucci Narcissistic Abuse Recovery, right here on YouTube. I will be sure to link it on the end screen, which might be happening right now if you're watching the replay, and put it in the description below. Make sure that you check out Lisa's channel and her group coaching, which you can go to queenbeing.com/groups, groups, to check that out.
I think it's group coaching. I think it's .com/group coaching because I think the groups has everything.
The one that says groups is the one that I made a redirect.
Oh, is that for this? Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, cool. Sorry.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm just playing around. Okay. Anyway, you can go to Lisa's channel and find all that stuff too, or just go to queenbeing.com/Lise. Okay. Lise, by the way. Hubble Mom will pop into the chat, our, what is this called? She'll pop in our reminders. Welcome also to our new moderator, Christine Schwartz.
Welcome.
And we'll see. Yeah, I just decided I made her a mod while I was in the process. I know her and trust her, so it's good. All right, everybody. We will see you next week. Have a good one. Thanks, Lise.
Bye. Thank you, Angie.
Bye. Bye-bye.